This episode, Once Upon the 1970s and 80s. Hello, and welcome to the inaugural episode of the Once Upon a Geek podcast, a proud new member of the Fire and Water podcast network. My name is the Irredeemable Shag, and I will be your host for each episode. The first thing I want to say to you folks at home is thank you for downloading this episode and giving this podcast a try. Welcome aboard! You know, today's episode will be a discussion about what it was like growing up geeky in the 1970s and 80s. Hopefully you'll have some fun and relate to some of the discussion. Now, in future episodes of the show, I'm planning to cover a variety of geeky topics, and it's going to change episode to episode. Everything really is fair game, but I'm planning to focus primarily on science fiction, comic books, pop culture, what it means to be a geek in the real world, and, you know, other nostalgia-fueled ideas. The goal here is to produce a show covering topics that I love, you know, things that I'm passionate about, stuff that brings me joy. You know, lots of podcasts seem to exist just to be cynical and negative and just to tear down the things that we love. Somewhere in my podcasting career, I decided to try and leave all that negativity behind and instead celebrate the things I enjoy. You know, find something I'm passionate about and talk about those things. Now, to be completely fair, it's not all going to be flowers and sunshine. Now, when it's something that needs to be called out and be critical of, sure, we're going to do that. But we're not going to do an entire episode just bashing on some topic. You know, if something's bad, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to waste my time covering it and get all wrapped up in that negativity. For a number of years, my podcasting mantra has been find your joy. And that's exactly what we're trying to do here with this series. Now, I'm going to give you a sneak peek into the future episodes and topics I'm already planning to cover on this series, and some of it's going to be discussed again later in the episode, so forgive me for the repeated information, but the next few episodes will be a podcast mini-series taking a deep dive into the beloved 1980s science fiction franchise, V. Yeah, I'm talking about the whole alien lizards, the visitors, Diana, Mike Donovan, the Resistance, the whole thing. We're going to talk about the two TV miniseries, the weekly ongoing series, the comic books, the novels, you know, all that spinoff stuff, the merchandise, the music, the whole fan experience. And then further episodes, I'm going to talk about things like Doctor Who, the Blue Devil comic book series, Blake 7, you know, what it's like to be a geeky parent, my experiences managing a comic book store in the 1990s, and a whole lot more. I'd love to do episodes on pretty much everything I love. You know, I want to do episodes on stuff like Star Trek or Star Wars or the Daredevil comic books or the Micronauts comic books or role-playing games and Back to the Future and just millions and millions of things come to mind. Now, as I mentioned, I'll be your guide for each episode, but in most cases, I won't be going it alone. I'm planning to have an ever-changing roster of guest hosts. Today, I've got two guest hosts, folks I've known for a pretty long time. Sometimes, it feels like I've known them my whole life. So I'll introduce them in just a bit. But first, we need to take a second to thank our sponsors. Folks, this episode of the Once Upon a Geek podcast is sponsored, in part, by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 42% off with free shipping on orders of $50 or more. Now, each episode, we'll select a collected edition to briefly discuss from the InStockTrades library, and it's going to be tied to that discussion in some way, shape, or form. Today, I picked Invincible Trade Paperback, Volume 1, Family Matters. Now, Invincible, if you're not familiar with it, it's sort of a coming-of-age story of a young man whose father is a superhero, kind of like the Superman of their world. But then, as the young boy develops his powers, he finds out that not everything is exactly like he thought. You may have actually heard of Invincible. It's recently got animated, and it's been all over Amazon Video. They developed that as an animated series. But this is the comic books it was based on. This trade paperback collects Invincible issues 1 through 4, published by Image Comics. The writer is Robert Kirkman. The artists are Corey Walker and Bill Crabtree. The page count is 120 pages. It's full color. It's a soft cover. Normally retails for $12.99, but right now on InStock Trades, it's 42% off, so you can get it for $7.53. That's a great price! And Invincible, it is really a wonderful read. This is the perfect place to jump in and start your journey with the Invincible story. So for this and all your other trade paperback needs, please visit InStockTrades.com. Now, we also need to take a second to thank you folks at home, because this episode is also sponsored in part with your Patreon support. Because, you know, running the Firewater Podcast Network that this show is a part of, with so many shows, requires a whole lot of online hosting and other services. And a while back, we realized we needed some help with the expenses. So we launched the Patreon, and you folks really stepped up to help keep the network going. So if you're enjoying shows like this on the network, the best way to support them is by visiting our Patreon, which is patreon.com/FW Podcast. And while you're there, consider supporting the Firewater Podcast Network. And in certain tiers, you'll get mentioned on your favorite shows. This episode, we'd like to recognize David Ace Gutierrez and Gord Tolton. Again, please visit our Patreon at patreon.com/FW Podcast. All right, so I've done a lot of talking. In just a bit, our guests are going to do a lot of talking. But right now, folks, this is the part of the show where you come in. If you've ever listened to any of my podcasts in the past, you know that I love to build a community around the podcast. Because it isn't just my show. It's intended to be a shared experience for us all. And I want to hear your stories of growing up geeky. You know, do you have similar experiences to what we're going to talk about in this episode? Or was it completely different? Or feel free to share topics that you want to hear covered in future episodes of Once Upon a Geek. You know, let me know, and I'll be reading your feedback on a future episode of this podcast. Now, the best way to be part of the conversation is to comment on our website. So just visit our website, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com/onceuponageek, and leave your thoughts on the show post for this episode. You can also reach us on Twitter at Once Upon a Geek, or you can find us on Facebook and Instagram as Once Upon a Geek Podcast. Remember, folks, we are all geeks, and we're all part of this geeky community together. All right, it's almost time to get started, but first, we're going to take a quick podcast promo break. We're going to play a couple of commercials for other podcasts, and when we return, I'll be joined by my guest for this episode. Are you ready for this? I'm so excited. My guests today are none other than my real-life sister and my real-life brother. Yeah, this is going to be an irredeemable family reunion. I cannot wait. And in full disclosure, I did warn them before we started recording. I said, be on your best behavior. Don't make me turn this podcast around.
It's Fade Out. Hosted by film fanatic Rob Kelly and a roster of special guests, Fade Out will examine the final films of Hollywood's brightest lights, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Justice League International, Bwahaha Podcast, a monthly show chronicling the adventures of the JLI era by Keith Giffen and JMD Mateus. We started with the very first issue, and our coverage goes all the way through breakdowns. We're going issue by issue in release order, tackling two comics per episode, both a Justice League America issue and a Justice League Europe issue. Now, along the way, we're also taking time out for special episodes covering the quarterly book, interviews with various comic book creators, discussing the plethora of spin-off series, cartoon appearances, the infamous TV pilot, and more. And when we're all done, we'll wrap up our coverage by looking at the 2003 and 2005 stories formerly known as the Justice League, and I can't believe it's not the Justice League. So join me in an ever-changing roster of guest hosts as we celebrate your favorite JLI members, such as...
Batman.
Martian Manhunter.
Captain Atom.
Fire. Ice.
Rocket Red.
The Flash.
The Elongated Man.
Maxwell Lord.
Elrond.
Power Girl.
Renard de Rousse. I mean, Crimson Fox.
Guy Gardner.
Metamorpho.
Booster Gold.
Blue Beetle.
Nort.
Justice League International Bwahaha Podcast, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Want to make something of it? All right, folks. So, yes, I am here with my genuine siblings. I am here with both my brother and sister to chat today about what it was like growing up as a geek in the 1970s and 80s. So, first, folks, I would like to introduce you to my sister, Eve. Eve, please say hi to the folks at home.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for letting me harass my brothers online.
I was going to say, because you don't do it normally, right? Also with us is my brother, my evil twin, if you will, Lore. Say hey to everybody, Lore.
That would be the irredeemable Lore.
So explain Lore to the people at home.
Oh, man. So this goes back to your initial website, Once Upon a Geek, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I was really enjoying the content and stuff. That's before I got a life. You and your friends were on there just having really fun conversations, and I felt like I want to contribute, but anonymously. So I was trying to think of what would be a cool brother name, and then, you know, Lore, right? The first brother, the older brother, the better looking one.
better looking of the identical twins.
Right. Biologically, we're the closest we have to one another in the universe, right?
So that is true. Makes
sense to me and Laura. So, except you like cats and, and lack a soul.
He's not wrong. He's not wrong.
Man.
So, Sister Eve, you've also chosen your name based on Star Trek. Is that correct?
I did. I chose Eve. She was one of Harry Mudd's women in the original Star Trek. And she was pretty plain until she took the Venus drug. And then she was gorgeous. And later on in the episode, she took a placebo. And she was gorgeous then, too. So it turns out she always had it in her. I kind of like that. So there you go.
That is very sweet. And you never needed the drug because you've always been beautiful.
Well, and I'd like to say, since we're doing this podcast and nobody can see me, I am about 5'11". My legs go, gosh, almost up to my neck. And I have flowing, flaming red hair. Gorgeous almond eyes. And that's about it.
So we're kind of twins, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
There's no video?
Wait, is your camera on, Lore?
Well, you can't see, you guys can't see my cosplay?
Did you paint yourself up like Laura? That I gotta see.
Yeah, pasty white in contacts. But seriously, do your advertisers know this?
I think they would pay less if they knew that you were on video, sir.
How are you gonna pay us?
The check will be in the mail just like it is every birthday. How's that?
Oh, again, I'm getting hosed, right? Free talent.
Yep, exactly right. That's how it's worked our entire lives growing up. So let's talk about this.
That's it. I'm out.
Thank goodness he's gone, right?
Funny.
The funny part is he probably still has an old dial phone that makes that noise. So,
well, I figured that was like you know, 80s-centric. You got a phone.
So, yes, we grew up in the 1970s and 80s because we're older than dirt, folks. And I wanted to look at this through the lens of being geeky back then. And what I want to do to start off was define the word geek, at least the way I'm using it. And I'm doing this according to something called the Social Order Venn Diagram. And it's a visual, so really fun explaining that on an audio podcast. But the gist of it is it's three giant spheres. One is about obsession, which seems to be sort of the linchpin of being a geek, but obsession. The other circle is intelligence. And the final circle is social ineptitude, meaning your lack of social skills. And the various ways these intersect gives you terms like geek, nerd, dork, or dweeb. In fact, I think my brother qualifies for all three in some ways. But
which brother?
So where I come to the term geek in this regard is geek, according to this diagram, is the intersection of intelligence, obsession, and yet having social skills. Not that, you know, the three of us really should claim to have social skills, but we all seem to manage and function through life and have found partners and things like that. So we seem to hold our own, I suppose. So I think of geek as the intersection of intelligence and obsession and being kind of able to function as a normal human being. The fact is, everybody is geeky about something. And I got to give credit to my daughter, my 16-year-old daughter. I was having a conversation with her about this yesterday, saying, hey, I'm going to do a podcast with your aunt and uncle. She said, I'm sorry. And then we kind of talked about how everybody's geeky about something, right? Because, I mean, there's like music geeks, guys or girls that are totally obsessive about their music. And they've actually cultivated like this air of intelligence and like kind of even snobbishness. You know, like everyone knows like a snobby music geek, right? They think they're better than other people. And there's even substrata within that area where you're like, depending on the type of music you like, you get to like think you're cooler than the other music geek. Then there's sports geeks. And this is actually considered okay in social context to be a sports geek. You know, it's if you know the batting average of every player of
baseball stats.
Well, sorry, I did go for baseball stats. So, all right, if you know every stat of the 1984 Chicago Bears or something like that, that's okay. That means you're cool. However, on the flip side, if you know that the first appearance of Spider-Man is Amazing Fantasy 15, you're like a total loser. So, sadly, science fiction and comic book geeks are kind of pretty low on that totem pole of social structure. And where it really comes down to is everybody's geeky about something, but it's sort of, this is terrible, but it's sort of human nature to put down other people to make yourself feel better. You know, you're like, oh, well, I'm not as bad as that guy. You know, even comic book nerds put down furries because we got to be better than somebody. So everyone's got something they're geeky about, and it's just a matter of how you accept that. So in the 1970s and 80s, especially, you know, the way I remember, I don't know if you'll agree, but like, it was all about being cool. You know, that was the thing. You wanted to be desperately cool in the 70s and 80s. You know, there was the movie Breakfast Club that we all saw, right? That taught us that no matter who you were, everybody felt pressure. Everyone felt like an outsider. Everyone felt like they didn't fit somehow at some point. the TV show Square Pegs. Did you guys remember? Do you ever watch Square Pegs?
I didn't, but I know. Sarah Jessica Parker, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that was one of the early attempts to try and show, you know, the social outcast perspective in the 80s. So the question I want to throw to both of you, and we'll start with you, Eve, is did you feel pressure growing up to be cool? Did you ever feel like a social outcast?
Well, yeah, of course. I felt like a social outcast. I think everybody is sort of taught you're supposed to conform, but, you know, and I'm sure we're going to get into this later, but, you know, our family was anything but conformist from an early age. You know, we were exposed to a lot of different things. So yeah, I felt like I didn't fit in. I think it got even worse in high school. So we moved to Florida from Michigan and it was ninth grade. So I didn't know anybody. You know, you're starting high school and you start school and you don't know anybody. And the first day of school, I get ready, I go on the bus. And in Michigan, at least when I was growing up, the cool place to sit was actually the front of the bus because the heat would come out. That's what I'd be the driver. So I was the first stop. I sat right in the front of the bus and everybody got on and just sort of stared at me. And I think by day two, I had met a friend who was also a social outcast who had persuaded me that we could really, really, you know, endear ourselves to our fellow high school students by wearing satin pants that matched the second day of school.
Okay.
So I did that. So yeah, so it wasn't a great start. And I did feel a lot like an outcast.
It's fair to say, though, see, in the South, we found out later on, it was cool to sit in the back of the bus because you're as far away from the bus driver as possible so you could get away with your hijinks. So there you are. I mean, literally the front seat was the last one always taken. So I feel your pain. Get on the bus, you're like proud as could be and just soul crushing, I imagine it was.
It was. And then I think day three, I joined drama club, which again, fit in with a lot of my loves, but again, was where the social outcasts kind of tended to gather once in a while. So, but they were the best ever.
So like this pressure, the impact on you, do you feel like it changed you going forward in any way?
Definitely. I actually have this working theory that it is better to be a social outcast and then work, you know that diagram you were talking about with social ineptitude.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you have the desire to be the best you can be in all sorts of ways, that you can foster your nonconformist, your geeky part. But also, I think because you're trying to do that, you learn to bridge a lot of different things. So I think absolutely it helped me. I'm actually, you know, my career is in the communications field now. I feel certain that that background of feeling awkward prepared me to communicate with people on all sorts of different levels.
That's awesome. You turned an adversity into a benefit for you. That's fantastic.
Definitely.
So, Lore, what about you? I mean, you've always been the cool guy, at least to me growing up.
The older brother advantage. It's not true. It's just...
So did you feel that?
Yeah, it's funny. It's kind of the same time as Eve was saying. You know, you think back to the late 70s when you had three channels on TV and your influences were regionalized. You know, there wasn't the internet and Instagram and instant everything and cable news. And so I'm going to build into this. You know, when we were in Michigan, you were listening to Styx from Chicago and Kiss from Detroit. And, you know, you dressed in what mom and dad gave you. And then we moved to Florida, the deep South, though, I think is the point. And kind of everything changed. The stuff you knew, you know, suddenly it's Lynyrd Skynyrd and Molly Hatchet. And style and fashion became a big deal, like Levi's. Everybody wore Levi's, but we didn't. And I don't know why, but it was expensive, right? And the parents wouldn't get it. And so I felt like an outcast because all the kids you grew up with, all the kids you went to elementary school and middle school were not the same. So the first year was a real transition and just, you know, you feel like an outcast and you kind of find your way. And I moved in the eighth grade, which was the last year of middle school. And so kind of the first year of high school, we all switched up schools and everybody was from somewhere else, you know, and it wasn't like the same group you grew up with. So I just kind of wore it, you know, at that point, I just kind of said, beep it and, you know, owned it and went on from there.
So I got to ask you, because growing up, one of the things I remember most about you was you were very, very active in band. In fact, you were the drum major, which is like, a prestigious thing within the band. However, you know, my memory in the 80s and 90s was, you know, band nerds, right? And here you were king of the band nerds. So what kind of pressure or did you feel any pressure with that or not? not? What was that like?
I don't know. You know, when I started in band, I started in the way it worked is you started in like the concert band, which is a regular music band. Everybody sits down and then you go to stage shows and stuff. And in the summer, they started marching band. And it was a whole different thing. Instead of sitting on your butt and playing to one dude in the middle, you know, you're marching and you're part of the football game and the pageantry and everything. And I just fell in love literally with the concept and started dating the band drum major, actually. Now that I think about it, my first girlfriend. And just decided I was going to, you know, if I'm going to be a nerd, I'm going to be the king of the nerd, or band geek, I guess you would say. And so, yeah, I worked to practice my trumpet skills and my directing skills. And by the time I was a senior, I was leading the high school.
So did anybody give you crap for that growing up, though? Or did they treat you like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool? How did they treat you?
It was a mixed bag, for sure. You know, younger in high school, and I wonder if other people had the same thing. Like, you had the geeks and the dweebs and the druggies and the jocks and the cheerleaders, and, you know, everyone was very segmented.
Yeah.
But by the time we got to be seniors, you kind of just accepted everybody for who they were. And I don't know if that's like a rite of passage or it just happens naturally, but I was dating cheerleaders, you know, at that time. One of the few non-jocks to do that. So kind of breaking boundaries. Very Revenge of the Nerd moment.
That's awesome. So yeah, you were a testament for, you know, geeks everywhere to find their way and fit in and live that life. So good for you.
Now, hold on, Shag. You don't get off this easy. Just ask these questions. Sorry.
I thought that's how this worked. I just make you two talk, right?
No. Okay, so tell us a little bit about your experience.
So, as you guys said, we came down here in 79. I was in second grade. So I was so early in school that I didn't really have a problem adapting to the move. You know, certainly there's terminology and things like that. But, you know, you get to middle school, though, and that's where all of the real pressure hit me, because I didn't feel like I fit in. There was a program in our school, it's called the Gifted Program, which was you take an IQ test, and depending on how you score in it, they put you in these special classes, or either advanced classes or just different ways of thinking. Well, I did well. I ended up in this. And I mean, I didn't know this term at the time, but it was, for me, it was totally imposter syndrome. I felt like I did not belong in these classes. I felt like, okay, any minute now, they're going to figure out that I'm an idiot and I don't belong in these classes. Everyone around me is so much smarter than me, and I'm just going to pretend to go along. So I felt like an outcast, just even in the classroom setting, because I felt like I didn't fit in. I mean, I could pass the classes, but I didn't feel like I belonged. Then, of course, the middle school ribbing comes in and they pick on you, and that's horrible. I mean, I often refer to middle school as like a cesspool of testosterone and hormones and awfulness. It's just terrible. I watched my kids go through it. It's awful. By the time I got to high school, this may come as a shock to those of you that have been listening to me podcast for a while. Shag's not my real name. I actually created the Shag identity in high school to try to be cool. I mean, I didn't know it at the time, but in hindsight, I see it. I was trying to figure out who I was, and I was trying to separate myself from the nerd I had been. I still had nerdy hobbies and everything, but I desperately wanted to, you know, fit in. Unfortunately, I didn't realize changing your name to Shag in 11th grade would actually make people pick on you more, but whatever. And I had a close circle of friends that I felt safe with, you know. Now, by the time I get to college, you know, I was working in a comic book store, so I actually was able to embrace my geeky stuff, and it propelled me forward. It actually worked to my advantage, and it certainly has with podcasting as well. I've made a tremendous amount of friends just through doing this stuff. However, my professional life has actually caused me some problems. One of my jobs, several of the coworkers, you know, became aware of my geeky habits, and they decided it'd be fun to pick on me every opportunity they got. You know, to them, they thought it was just, you know, haha, but I felt like it was genuinely jeopardizing my career because people saw me as a target for jokes. And so I have done everything I can to separate those worlds. So it's something that I still struggle with to this day.
Yeah, it started before then, though, right? I seem to remember some underoos and a cape.
I have.
Wasn't that last year?
I might be wearing them right now. I'm not saying yes or no. No video.
That's why there's no video.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, I was a fan of superheroes at a very young age. I remember when we lived in Michigan on the Southridge house. You guys remember the one at the top of the hill?
Absolutely. We had to share a room.
We shared a room, gosh, till you...
Not all of us.
No.
I didn't mean all three of us, the boys.
Laura and I shared a room, yes, for many, many years, until you left for college, really. But I remember remember that Southridge house. So I would have been 6 years old, probably. I remember running home from the bus stop as fast as I could to get to the house. And for all I know, maybe I was trying to beat you guys to the TV. I don't know. Anyway, I remember running home just so I could catch the last few minutes of the reruns of the old George Reeves Superman TV show. Like that, I remember clearly that young how much I loved superheroes. So that's sort of my earliest memory of that. That, and yes, I had the underoos, the Superman underoos, and I would wear the underoos shirt, like a shirt. I'd wear it to school. I didn't care. And yeah, I have a photo of you, Lore, holding me up like I'm flying. And I've got like a red towel tied around my neck. So yeah.
I wonder where that photo went. I need a copy of it. I thought you had Wonder Woman underoos too.
You know what? That could explain some sexual identity questions, I suppose. Maybe I have. I don't know. I know I had Boba Fett. I was Mandalorian before it was cool, man.
Jango Fett.
Right. So, all right. As we said, everyone's geeky in their own way, right? And everyone's passionate or obsessed about something growing up. So I'm going to throw it. We'll start again with you, Eve. So do you remember growing up, did you collect anything? Were you obsessive about anything? And remember, being geeky isn't a bad thing. It just means that you were obsessive about something at some point. So what about you?
All right. So I'm going to answer your question, but I'm going to jump to right now first. And I am obsessive, but I'm like episodically obsessive. Whether I'm binge watching a show or a current event, let's say pandemic or Armageddon, right? I'm obsessive on that. But when I was younger, I was, you know, they used to call me Sarah Bernhardt, which not the comedian, but the old actress, very dramatic. And I think I was obsessive about play acting. I mean, honestly, we would do play acting all the time. Laura and I would act out Lost in Space with some neighbors, like from very early, early age. We would do Star Trek. You know, there was a lot of that. So I think it was mainly play acting that I was that obsessive about. I mean, I did get into theater and I did some things because of that. But it wasn't so much collecting as that activity. Everything was an opportunity for a monologue was my favorite. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's probably where my obsession area was.
Now, that led you places, though, right? I mean, the fascination with play acting led you into the theater. Is that right?
It did. No, it did. In fact, I thought it was going to be my career. I didn't do much acting in school, but I did do like civic and community theater. And then I don't think I ever auditioned and did not get a part, which is pretty lucky.
Ego much?
Well, no, I didn't. I probably selected my things pretty carefully. I probably selected them as a good fit. But when I was graduating high school, I had an opportunity to work in a Star Equity Theater. And so it was interesting. A lot of the, you know, I don't know what the demographics exactly are of your listeners. Some of the older people, more, you know, my age might know that there were, at that point, it was Sid Charisse, Tony Danza, Julie from The Love Boat, you know, a lot of people that I would work with. But it also, that time was the 80s, and I realized acting in the 80s was just full of too many, maybe addiction hazards, etc. Mm. So I actually got out of it. But yeah, so I would say that was my obsession, was play acting.
I seem to recall there's a story about you in one case pulling a prop gun and causing a problem. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. So that was at the Star Equity Theater. And Patty Davis, who was President Reagan's daughter, actually debuted with us. And she really was very kind to the younger members of the theater and would take us out. And so we got to know some of her Secret Service people. And one night, gosh, it must have been, you know, we would do a lot of the set changes at night. And it must have been about 11:30 or 12. And we were doing a Cops and Robbers children's pantomime the next day. So I was walking through the lobby of the auditorium and I had a prop gun with me and I thought it would be hilarious. And I mean, I was still young and stupid. I thought it would be hilarious to hold it up to Sam, the CIA guy. And I said, "Hey, Sam." And within seconds, I had guns at my head. I mean, I wasn't really thinking. It was a pretty serious thing. Luckily, I don't know, maybe they're trained, but at least they hesitated. But yeah, it was kind of scary.
Oh my gosh, that is crazy.
Yeah, Sam warned me. Never do it again.
We'll see if you've learned.
Yeah.
So I think there's another story about you and Carol Kane. Those of us who know Carol Kane's career, we absolutely adore her. Scrooge is one of my favorite movies, and she just makes that movie fantastic. So, didn't you have an encounter with her?
She was really great. She also was very kind. She would take us aside, and she would encourage us to be ourselves. She actually, I think... All right, I lied to your audience. I just need to come clean. I am not 5'11". I'm 4'11". With a lot of high hopes. So Carol actually took me aside also and talked to me about owning my size, because she's not much bigger, right? Like we really saw eye to eye. And she spent quite a bit of time just talking to me about making sure I showed self-confidence, making sure I was comfortable in my own skin. So yeah, hats off to that lady.
That's absolutely wonderful. You know, like you always hope that an actor you see on television or a movie or whatever is a good person or is whoever they portray themselves to be. And that's wonderful that she did that for you. That's incredible. You're a lucky lady. So speaking of lucky ladies, Lore, what about you, man? What, were you passionate or geeky or obsessed about anything growing up? And again, geeky is not a bad thing. What about you?
Oh, yeah. Well, I got to own the Star Wars geek, right?
Yeah, you do.
It's funny because when you mentioned this call, I started just kind of thinking back. And I guess the interest in space started before Star Wars. You know, like you ran home to watch Superman. I remember Lost in Space, like black and white. And I think just one of the years, maybe it was in color. They colorized it later or something. And so in the Star Trek reruns and stuff. So there was like space before. But Star Wars was like a game changer. I remember, and it's funny because I really don't know if this is factual, but my memory is that Dad and our favorite uncle took us to the theater near Detroit for the holidays, which is not where we lived, and it was packed, but we didn't know anything about it. And there before us, you know, unfolded this amazing space opera that just I became obsessed with. And you know, again, back then you didn't have movies and TVs, and even Blockbuster hadn't started yet. So I would go down. I could walk to the theater, ride my bike, and I want to say I saw it 12 times. Like when people used to do that, right? And it just became an obsession. And I collected the cards, which I think you still have, right?
Yeah, I have your old trading cards.
I didn't do baseball cards. I didn't do anything else, but you know, Star Wars trading cards and just everything. And so, in fact, if you remember that room that we shared, we switched over from Bambi to Star Wars. You know, we had sheets and we had the drapes and everything. So it's funny. I mean, to me, that kind of, I guess it lit my fire, but you could almost see a cultural shift. You know, you think back to that era and suddenly like everything is space, right? You got to put James Bond in space. He had Moonraker. You had to put a space guy in the number one TV show from the 50s, Happy Days. Suddenly Mork pops up, right?
Yeah, right.
And they put Star Trek back into production. Like it just, to me, that was a game shifter and totally obsessive. I mean, I knew, you know, the characters whose names they never said, you know, and all that. And I think you were right along on my coattails.
That's fair to say. You influenced me, I think, quite a bit in that, because I don't know. I'm struggling. My memory is, it's funny. You mentioned earlier, you're not sure if it's a real memory or not. So I go with that a lot, is a lot of times I have to tell a story that I think it's true, but you know what? In my mind, it is. So perception is reality. So I'm not even entirely sure if I ever saw Star Wars in the first release, because I would have been 5 years old. Now, maybe one of the 11 times you saw it, maybe I wrote on your handlebars down to the theater. I have no idea. But I probably would have seen it at the very least in the second release, because it came out in 77 and 78. They released it twice. I would have probably seen it by then. But I remember you having the cards. I remember you would color these posters. You would get these long, like, you know, white, not cardboard, but just, you know.
Oh, yeah. The old black felt marker stuff.
Right. Yeah. And you'd hang those up on the wall. And I remember staring at those. And sometimes you do like Day-Glo colors or whatever. It was awesome. So I got into the action figures. And so I remember collecting the action figures. I was super passionate about that. I was desperate to get all of them. I remember one time, and this involves you, Eve. It was crazy. We had to take two buses to get to our school at one point when we lived in one house. We had to go down to bus down to the junior high, and then we'd have to take the junior high down to the elementary school. And I brought my action figures with me one day for show and tell. And Eve, I remember you telling me, like, you know, I wanted to go off and play with all my friends. So I would just set them down at the bench, and you're like, don't leave them there. Someone's going to take them. Well, I think I covered them with my action figures with a jacket or something, thinking that'd be fine. Sure enough, I came back and they're gone. And, you know, here I am, this 5-year-old, 6-year-old kid, and my whole life, everything I cared about was in that little Ziploc bag of action figures, and suddenly it was gone. It was devastating losing those, and had to slowly build up my collection again and all that. But yeah, I was diehard into Star Wars, big time. And I think you had a lot to do with that, man. And you're right, it did change everything. Because, you know, before that, a lot of science fiction was sort of cerebral. You know, it was like the stuff you think about. It was, you know, it was Star Trek. It was Logan's Run. It was people talking in rooms around blinking machines. You know, there wasn't lightsabers flying around and laser guns as much. And Star Wars changed the direction of science fiction forever.
Yeah, it was quite an eye-opener. And it's funny, if you go back and if you just read the script, it's kind of boring. But I'm not kidding. Like, the dialogue itself isn't great, but the acting was superb. The directing, the music.
Hold on a minute. go back and watch A New Hope again and watch Mark Hamill's performance and tell me the acting is superb, please.
I might have said that, right. In comparison to the second trilogy, which is really the first trilogy, which really nobody watches.
Now we're going to get the hate comments about the people that love the prequels. Okay, settle down, folks.
No doubt. Get it.
So I got to mention with posters, this is totally not related, but I remember you as a bit of a music geek as well. Like, I remember you being obsessive about music. I remember we owned a lot of 45s in the house. I remember dancing as a kid in the house, but you had, and I'm going back and forth. I don't know that you remember this, but I do. I remember you had a Kiss poster, and it was like four faces of the band members staring out. They were photographs of the band members. And I had to go to bed earlier than you because I was, you know, infinitely younger than you. Because, I mean, you're like a really old man now. And I was much younger, and I'd have to go to bed before you. And
I'm old enough to go to bed early now.
Every night, I would have to get out of bed before I turned out the lights and literally take my fingers and poke the eyes of each one of the Kiss members. Because you remember back in the 80s, just like we thought quicksand was around every corner, we also thought every house had holes in the walls and people were staring at us, you know, through eye holes in paintings, right? Remember all that in the Scooby-Doo cartoons? And so I was convinced those were people looking through the walls at me. So I'd poke their eyes where I went to bed every night.
God, I don't remember that. I'm not denying it. I am. I'm not going to own that.
Stuart, that he had to put fingers through eyes. Which one are you denying?
I wonder, you know what? It might have been the album cover, because, you know, we used to get albums and LPs. They were however big they were, because I did have Kiss records. I remember that. And I may have had a poster too, but that's funny.
I was smaller, so maybe the LP looked big. I don't know. You know, and then as far as me goes, like, you know, other geeky stuff and Doctor Who, you know, I first fell in love with that in 1983 on PBS. Like, I remember the first time, you know, again, you're a kid and you decide that you love something. And I remember the first time, like, with mom was saying, come to the dinner table or, you know, whatever. And I said, no, my show is on. And that's when I realized, when I said my show, that's when I realized, I'm like, oh, I guess I do care about this really cheesy looking show, British show that's on PBS. And that kind of began my passion there.
Yeah, that one, you kind of broke away from the pack on that one. I don't think any of us really got into Doctor Who as much as was dad. Dad didn't watch that.
No, I was on my own on that one. I still am in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Didn't Aunt Babe make you a blanket like based on that, or a scarf?
She knitted me a 12-foot scarf. Yeah.
Based on the fourth Doctor.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Tom Baker. Yeah. How incredibly generous is that? You know, this 12-year-old kid produces this knitting pattern out to be found in a magazine, and our great aunt spent who knows how many months, you know, knitting this 12, ridiculously 12. I remember her being like, 12 feet? Are you serious? You know, like a 12-foot scarf for me. I mean, it was incredibly nice. I've still got it hanging on the wall behind me right now.
Yeah, we can see it on the video.
Oh, right, right.
That's what every Floridian needs, is right. A 12-foot scarf.
What is in your room besides that scarf? Let us kind of picture what that room looks like.
Six bookcases full of
what?
Mostly novels or comic book trade paperbacks. Then there's a glass curio case full of action figures. There's a lot of superhero posters on the wall. A lot of nerdy stuff in here.
You've got a big collection.
You've got a podcast empire, right? You've got your own network. When is this broadcasting, by the way?
Folks, you should be hearing this in early April is about when this should be coming out.
Well, don't you think they'd be listening to it when they hear it?
Well, they might be listening to it 6 years later.
All right.
So I have a question, though. He brought up a really great point. Here you are. You have this empire of podcasts, right? So why are you doing this new show?
That's a good question. So I started dabbling with podcasts, like being a guest on some friends of mine podcasts, starting back in 2005. That is 17 years ago. Oh, my gosh. And I've been podcasting regularly with the Fire and Water podcast stuff since 2011, which is 11 years now. Oh, my gosh. I do a lot of like specific shows with a really, really narrow focus, like superhero stuff. Like I'll podcast about Firestorm, or I'll podcast about Aquaman or the Justice Society, or a specific format like these comic book digests. Or I do these other ones, these what they call long-term index shows, which is where I cover specific comic book series, but I go issue by issue. Like I'll do issue one, next episode issue two, issue three. And I've done ones on Who's Who. And I'm currently doing one on Justice League International. And I absolutely love it. The Justice League International show is fantastic. I've been doing it for 6 years now, every month.
Wow.
I still have 2 more years to go on it. By the end, it's going to be an 8-year project. And I love it. But man, I am a little tired. Like, that's a long time doing the same thing. So I wanted to do a new show that gave me an outlet to talk about like whatever I want to talk about, you know, like whatever topic I want to do. It could be a variety. That way I kind of, not that I'm burned out on Justice League, but like I need a change, man. So doing this gives me a chance to talk about stuff like this, personal stuff, or I'm planning episodes to talk about Doctor Who or the classic sci-fi franchise V. I'm going to do some Blue Devil comics, Blake 7. You know, other real world experiences, like I'm going to do an episode on what it was like working in a comic book store during the 1990s, or what it's like being a geek and raising children and how you influence that. So it's that's why I'm doing the show, is to give me a bit of a variety. So this show is going to come out sort of periodically at first, but once I finish the JLI show, this is going to be my regular home. This is going to be my new monthly ongoing show. I was looking for a chance to do that. And the name, Once Upon a Geek, you mentioned it earlier, Lore, that came from my old blog that I started in 2008. Now, all three of us have marketing degrees, so you guys might appreciate this. I actually, back in 2008, like when blogging was kind of really starting to get going, I'm like, I don't understand this. I don't get what this blogging thing is. I don't understand why it works. I don't understand how someone popularizes, how they monetize it, any of that. So I literally started my first blog as a marketing experiment, just to see how it worked, how to do it, and if I could make something popular. And I did pretty well. I mean, I wasn't like, you know, famous or anything, but it did well. I got a large number of hits every day, and it got to the point where sponsors were sending me merchandise, asking me to review. And so I was like, oh, cool, look at this. You know, I've done this successful marketing project. And that blog actually kicked off a chain of events, which led directly to me podcasting and co-founding the Firewater Podcast Network. So it's kind of full circle that I'm coming back to the Once Upon a Geek name.
You've got a face for podcasting.
I do. I do. Yes, yes. Yeah. And a good thing that you're my twin, right?
The snoring you hear in the background is my dog, I swear.
Wouldn't you also get like movies sent to you?
Yeah. I got a lot of merchandise sent to me as long as I would review it, whether it was positive or negative. And I did that for a while. And it was a lot of fun. And then I found it was a lot easier just to talk into a microphone than sit there and type all the time.
So you've got this network empire podcast thing, and
real quick, I just want to say for my partners, I know full well that this is not my network, y'all. I work with like 10 other people. We all produce for all partners in this thing. I am not telling my family members that is my empire. Just want to make that clear.
Absolutely telling his family members that every Thanksgiving, every holiday, he talks about my network.
So I, for me, like the realization was the time you guys, and I know it was actually Rob, I think, was quoted in the New York Times, correct me if I'm wrong, but when the Aquaman movie came out, it was like, shit, this is for real. But I got to ask, so I mean, you've got experts in all these categories, right? Obviously, you have Fire and Water, Firestorm and Aquaman, and DC in general, Star Wars, Star Trek. Like, what's your favorite, though? Like, is that, am I allowed to ask that? Are you like pissing me off if you give it up?
Like, what's my favorite show or my favorite topic to talk about?
The most interesting to you.
Okay. It's probably, I mean, because I've done so much, it's probably the comic books, really. And talking about whether it be Justice League or, I mean, I loved Firestorm, but I talked about him for like 9 years straight. So I'm kind of over that. It's like, okay, yeah. Enough's enough. So for me, a lot of it is just is the love and the joy that comic books bring me. It's an incredible medium. The nature of the storytelling can't be replicated by movies or TVs. There's something about freeze frame panels that I just love the comic book form. And actually, you know what? I'll tell a story here. Since we're talking about being geeky growing up, I'll tell you how I got into collecting comic books. So I had a few, I mean, we all had comic books growing up, right? Every kid read some. I remember reading Sad Sack and, you know, things like that. This is a story that might resonate a little bit with you too. The first two superhero comics that I can really remember was a Justice League comic and a Fantastic Four comic. And they were actually gifts. They were given to me in the either 79 or 1980. And they were given to me by our sister. There's three of us here on the podcast, folks. But growing up, there were four of us. We lost a sister when she was 16 years old. It was very difficult and very sad. I've talked a little bit on the air occasionally. But she was a wonderful, wonderful human being. And when she and I were kids, she and I were only 3 years apart. I remember the back door. This is the house in Florida, the one with the pool. By the back door, there was a comic book. And it had a little note on there that said it said, from a secret admirer. I'm like, what is this? And it was a Justice League comic. And I read the hell out of that thing. I've still got it to this day. And it's one of my favorite issues. And I've talked about before how it involves the Justice Society. And that led me on a whole passion. But either way, I love this comic. I read it over and over and over. And then she did it again. She gave me another one. It was a Fantastic Four comic that I absolutely loved. And I read and read and read. And somehow I found out she was a secret admirer. But that has always meant so much to me. And I'm not going to say that's where my passion for superheroes and comics came from, but that is certainly a very happy memory to be able to have that connection with her through that.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's got to be even more meaningful now.
Yeah, it really is.
All right, what would her persona be?
Oh my gosh.
Michael Burnham. She was brave. She was good. I think that would suit her.
I like that. That's really good. Yeah. So to take us from the sad to maybe even a little bit funny, how I got into becoming an actual like ongoing comic book collector. The story behind that was I was in sixth grade, and so I was a little bit older. And again, it's a new school, right? Middle school. It's new. You're still getting to know all these people. And I was in this group of kids, and they actually were mocking me. I became a comic book collector out of nerd peer pressure. So as much as nerds felt peer pressure from everyone else, they were willing to peer pressure each other as well. So I remember, and it's almost laughable now, but I remember sitting around the lunch table, right, with these kids, and I'm still friends with one of them, but and they were making fun of me for not knowing who the Avengers were. I didn't know who Ultron was. Now, in this day and age, of course everyone knows who the Avengers are, right? But comic booking was a real niche thing. And so they were mocking me for not knowing these characters, because there was a new comic on the market called Secret Wars. And remember that name, folks. It's probably going to be the next big Marvel movie thing. Anyway, it's all anyone could talk about was Secret Wars. And, you know, I knew who, like, Doctor Doom was and the X-Men from like these Spider-Man cartoons, but I didn't have any idea who any of the other characters were. And I was genuinely ashamed. I was embarrassed by my ignorance. And like, I remember walking home from the bus stop and like, imagine like the Charlie Brown cartoons where his head's down and like wah, 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 kind of music. Like that's how I'm feeling, right? So I go to the Sing store, which was our local convenience store, and there I saw a copy of issue number 2 of Secret Wars. And I remember like I remember grabbing that comic book, you know, whatever it was, 35 cents, whatever. And I said to myself, that is it. I am buying this comic, and from now on I am a comic book collector. And on that day I said, as God is my witness, they are not going to lick me. I am going to live through this, and when it's all over, I'll never be made fun of for superhero ignorance again. So by the way, my dress was made of curtains as well in that moment. But
great kid. Okay, cocky.
So that literally peer pressure is what got me collecting comics, and I haven't ever stopped. And it's, you know, it's sort of weird and ironic, nerds making fun of each other. I mean, because in the 80s, everyone was merciless, mean to nerds, and that was okay. Like, it was okay for you to make fun of those people. In that case, it was nerds, you know, sort of eating their own. They were looking for weakness in the herd, I guess. I don't know. Ooh. And everyone was trying to be cool by putting someone else down. You mentioned the Revenge of the Nerds movie lore. I mean, that's like the only time nerds came out on top, right?
Well, no, it's funny. I was thinking about that too, but aren't you kind of, are we entering our era? The way Marvel's blown up, the way, you know, DC has got really good TV shows.
I don't know. I just saw the Batman yesterday. It was actually pretty good.
I haven't seen it yet.
It was good.
Okay. We needed another Batman.
but you're right. You know, it's like that phrase, the geek shall inherit the earth. I mean, it's where we are now. Absolutely. It's, I don't know how long we'll be able to, you know, my people will be able to ride this train.
Our people.
I don't know how long our people will be able to ride this train, but yeah, we're in control of Hollywood right now, making $1 billion per movie. So at some point, though, I got to think the bubble's going to burst. I got to think so.
And then you'll be back in the corner.
Yep, exactly. Back in the corner, and all the sports nerds will be on top. That's exactly right. So influences, how we were influenced growing up. Like, obviously, we all found our own geeky outlets, right? Were our parents geeky about anything? Did that, and again, geek's not a bad thing. Did that influence us in any way? What do y'all think?
I want to step in here because I know there's so much to kind of unwrap about that. But, you know, early on, before Star Trek, before Lost in Space, I remember Night Gallery, Twilight Zone.
Ooh, yeah.
And Dad, I've got pictures of me being like 18 months sitting with Dad on the couch. I think I was on like the top of the couch and he's like laid out on the... And just watching, I would watch it at night with him. I mean, I don't know how late it would go, but as a kid, it felt like it was really late. But he was really into Night Gallery and Twilight Zone. So I think that had a huge early impact on my mind opening to all things sci-fi.
That's fair. I remember being very, very young, going to a 3D movie with mom and dad.
Oh, yeah. Vincent Price.
Yeah, in some horror movie. I don't know what it was, but it was a 3D horror kind of sci-fi thing. And early on, they were definitely influencing us that way. You're right.
Yeah, that had to be. I mean, Dad's interest, I think, you know, kind of came down to us all, whether that was music, magic, sci-fi.
So I remember mom, you know, being geeky in her own way. Like, and again, geek's not a bad thing. Like, you know, I remember at one point she was really into pottery. I remember she made a lot of pottery. We've got stuff, we had stuff all over
the ceramics. Sure. All yeah. the Christmas figures and the trees and the blue lights. I mean, yeah, she yep. definitely had some heavy interests.
She was obsessed with unicorns for a while. I remember that as well. And again, that can be defined as geeky. And the thing that I think is still...
Flamingos.
Later, much later.
But I think a tribute to her, though, too, is she's geeky about European history. I mean, think yeah. about all she knows about European history, and she shared with us. I mean, she's an amazing storyteller. If she sits you down and tells you about Prague, I mean, she makes that history come alive.
Absolutely.
It's not just like reading a history book. So, I mean, I think there's geekiness in all sides of our family.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, whether, you know, dad influenced all of us, I think, whether it was music or magic or Star Trek, right? Didn't he introduce you to that?
Yeah, he did. For me, I remember very clearly. So now you talked earlier about the difference between reality and memory, right? So you understand this story is memory, not necessarily reality. So I remember it's probably around 1979 to 1981, somewhere in that way. Our dad, by the way, he managed television stations and he made sure that his channel always carried Star Trek because he believed in the product and he enjoyed it. So I have this memory of us sitting in the family room or whatever, right? And I'm probably playing with Star Wars action figures. I don't know. And dad says, Boy, sit down and watch this. This is important. Now, our father does not talk like that. But
suddenly, dad's boss hog.
But he does in my story. So dad says, boy, sit down and watch this. It's important. And it was a classic Trek episode. It was Kirk versus the Gorn, which was like that lizard guy, if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
And it's called, the episode's called Arena. And I fell in love. I'm like,
with Kirk or Gorn?
So I fall in love with this. And I'm like, what have I been missing for 7 years? Right. So I absolutely became obsessed with Star Trek at that point. I remember specifically walking from the back door of the family room to the car. I don't know why. It's like little snippets of memory because my memory is not very good for our youth. But I remember walking to the car and I was so excited because we were all going to see Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan together. Like I was so obviously I must have been a Star Trek fan before that. But I just was so excited about seeing all that together. So what about you all? What like we'll start with you, Eve. What is your earliest memory of Star Trek? Did that come from the family? Did you find it on your own? Do you not have it?
Definitely from the family. Definitely, you know, and if nobody has said this already, our dad and William Shatner share more than a passing resemblance and manner, I think.
Yeah, for real.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. Especially the older years. Yeah. Like the movie years, especially.
Yeah. So he was always into Star Trek. We would watch it as a family. And I think, you know, there's two things that really stick with me about Star Trek. First of all, the morality of it. You know, it was even as a child, I could gauge that we were in a battle for good and evil. And, you know, there were so many interesting things. Forget the lizard man. Forget Harry Mudd. We had the huge floating Roman head. Right? Or Greek head. And there were so many just cool memories that way. And one other thing I'd like to say about Star Trek is I still talk about it today at my work because you look at the kinds of things we were introduced to, right? The communicators are cell phones, the replicators are 3D printers. We really are doing, you know, the transporter, they managed to move dust particles from one part of the world to the other. I don't know. It's pretty huge in my life there. I don't know if I answered that adequately, but my earliest memories were definitely dad and the family watching it together, and it has stuck.
Yeah. Hey, you mentioned technology. I mean, look at Star Trek Next Generation and the pads they all carry around, and look at the iPads now. I mean,
yeah,
it's exactly the same. Yeah. Flip phones, all that. So what about you, Lore? What's your earliest memories of Star Trek? Or was it always there?
Yeah, you know, we had so few choices back then to run.
Right.
And you enjoyed what you could, Gilligan's Island and Star Trek. You know, I don't feel like I really was that engaged immediately. And I don't know when the kind of love lust came. What amazed me is I didn't think of the social injustices that Gene Roddenberry was commenting on back then. We're too young to really comprehend it, but how well they kind of stood the test of time. I think I appreciated the original more when The Next Generation came out because I really expected that to be a bomb. I was like, you can't top, you know, Kirk and Spock, but it was brilliant. I really, you know, Star Trek Next Generation, I know you and I watched it together so many times. It just, that's the one that really stands out to me. It's just brilliantly written. It stands up. It's funny. I was on TV the other day and I've seen every single episode, but you forget, but it's like Letterbox, right? Now you've got, you get the giant screen TVs and high def, and it's still in old format, which is, you don't realize it. You know?
Well, it's funny. I saw a meme the other day that says, like, when you imagine Star Trek 20 years ago, and you think of Star Trek Next Generation, and it says, but what really Star Trek was 20 years ago was Star Trek Enterprise. Star Trek Next Generation was 35 years ago. Oh my gosh. So yeah, I have vivid memories of you and me, Laura. It would be, you'd get home from work or college or whatever, and I was in high school, and I remember we'd sit on the couches. There was like a couch and a love seat, and you'd get the longer one, and I'd get the shorter one because I was younger, and we'd watch TNG, that week's episode, like for like the, I don't know, the second or third time, and half the time we'd fall asleep because we were exhausted from getting up early or whatever, but we, that was a thing we would do every week. We'd watch it together. I love that.
Yeah, I forgot. Actually, you just reminded me. It was on a couple of times a week. Like, I forget what it was, but it might come on like a Thursday night at 8, and then they'd replay it like 2 days later or something.
Such a, oh, I video recorded them all too. Like, I, until, I don't know, a few years ago, I still had all those old videotapes.
Oh, wow.
So, Eve, Star Trek Next Generation. So, you were watching Next Gen as well or not? When did you come back?
I don't know if you remember this, but no. So I was really into the original Star Trek, even though I'm a lot younger than either of you.
Oh, my gosh.
I was watching, you know, I was into Star Trek original, but then, you know, right before, I guess, right when Star Trek Next Generation started, I was finishing college. I was involved in my first job. I was in a serious relationship, and I didn't have time for TV really. And so I hadn't really watched it. The relationship went south. And I don't know if you remember this. I think this might've been your first year in college, Shag. Was it mm-hmm. when you moved in with me?
Second year in college. Yeah.
Second year in college. Okay. And we hadn't, I mean, I don't even think we lived together that long, maybe less than a year. It was like, how long was it?
I can't remember. It was either less. It was somewhere in the range of 8 months to a year and 8 months. I don't know which, but it was incredibly.
It was a great time. It was a great time. And it stands out in my mind, maybe because I was in a low place emotionally. But you were like, you said, let's watch Next Generation. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, you've got to be kidding me. And we started watching, and maybe you had it recorded then. Maybe we started going through your tapes because, I mean, we watched it like binge watching before binge watching was a thing, right? Aww. And you got me addicted to it. And I felt the same way. You know, I still think the original Star Trek, I really, again, the lessons in morality, but Next Gen, it was compelling story. You fell in love with the characters. And I'll always think, you know, I can't watch it without thinking of you in that time period, Shag. So thanks. You reignited that fire in me for sci-fi.
That is incredibly sweet. I remember the time us living together was so incredibly wonderful. And it was the first time I'd ever moved out of the house, and it was the first time you and I ever really, really spent a lot of time together. Because I mean, you are so much older than me, to the point where we almost didn't even grow up together. Really, I mean,
not true, listeners. This is not true. This is.
I actually call her Aunt Eve.
No, he does not.
Well, think of that time together, us living together, is to make up for, you know, that was your penance you had to pay for threatening to melt my Star Wars figures when I was a kid.
Oh, I was young then, like 15. That. All right, I'm just going to come clean. 8 years. That's what I have on this guy. I was 15, and I want everybody to remember that the legal drinking age in Florida at that point was 18. And our parents, and if they're listening, love you guys so much. Love you. Why the heck would you leave a 15-year-old girl in charge of two young children, our sister Alicia and Shag? Lore was at band camp, I think. And
this one time,
right? Exactly.
Band camp. So there was supposed to be a party. One of my best friends' boyfriends, it was his birthday, and there was supposed to be a party outside at like a wilderness area, and it was raining cats and dogs. And somebody said, Eve's parents are out of town. And so this party, like it was a flash mob, descended on our house, although I must have had some heads up. Because I grabbed Alicia and Shag, I took them upstairs, and I said, you cannot tell mom and dad about this. You cannot tell. And I don't know, something in Shag's eyes, maybe I saw, maybe it was that morality he learned from Star Trek, but I could see he was thinking he might have to tell mom and dad. So I grabbed, which figure was it, Shag?
I'm pretty sure it was the Death Star Commander, I believe.
I grabbed the Death Star Commander, and don't ask me why I had a lighter, because I was not a smoker, but I grabbed it, probably dad's maybe, I grabbed a lighter. And I held the lighter, this figurine and this lighter in front of this little tiny child boy, and threatened to burn every single one of his figures if a word was uttered. I don't know if you remember that incident.
Just a little bit. Might be why I've been so protective and still have my figures and protect them.
Yeah, they're still in your line of sight, aren't they?
Right. I cannot abide a fire. Never, ever, ever, ever. Oh, my gosh. So, yeah, living together, that was your penance. You had to spend time watching Star Trek Next Generation, but it made you a better person now, see?
It was a pleasure. It was a pleasure. It really was.
And, and this fandom of Star Trek has actually helped hold us together because, I mean, genuinely, we all hate each other. We have restraining orders. We're not even allowed to be in the same room except on holidays. But Star Trek, we come together for that, I think it's fair to say. I mean, in 2009, Laura and I and our father, we all got together to watch the, you know, the reboot movie, the one with Chris Pine.
Guys Weekend?
Yeah, exactly right. It was Guys Weekend. And then a couple years later, we all got together in Orlando. Eve, you were there with us, where myself, Laura, Eve, and our father, we all watched the Star Trek Into Darkness movie.
At Universal Studios.
That's right, at Universal Studios. That's right. Now, the movie sucked, but it was nice for all of us to be together and experience it together.
It was still Guys Weekend. I crashed.
Says a lot about who you are, Eve. I'm just saying. So here we sit, you know, we're not young anymore. We're all actually quite close to getting Social Security.
Stop.
Some of us closer than others.
You're going to edit that, right?
Sure, right. So do you still have any geeky passions nowadays, whether they be secret and you, you know, keep them hidden, or are you out and proud about it? So we'll start with you, Laura. Are you geeky about anything nowadays?
Gosh, if we take the obsessive part, you know, you could say cooking, travel, but I still love my sci-fi. I mean, I use it as an escape. It's funny because my recall of movies and lines and stuff isn't really there because I just, it's like the one time I can totally check out. You know, we're all busy with our lives, careers, kids, and everything. And so if I can just turn on something and completely nothing to do with reality, total escapism is I still use sci-fi for that.
And I know you love the Marvel movies because you text me every time you watch one. It's like, who's this guy? Who's this character? What's this about?
Well, my kid. Yeah. I mean, I think I got into them for the kids, right? They were that age and you know, just like our dad did for us and we hand down to them. They just see you as an expert on everything. And even if I know, it doesn't matter. They just want to call Uncle Shag as soon as we leave the theater and ask about, you know, this or that, or what does it mean? And I love that. I think it's awesome.
I love being someone cooler than you to anyone. So that's amazing. I love my niece and nephew for that. That is absolutely wonderful. So what other geeky things would you say you passed on to your children, Laura?
Well, they love the Marvel movies and my daughter's taken on a life of her own. Like she's really into Deadpool. She was into Deadpool before the movies came out, which was kind of educating me, which was interesting. They're both really big into music, which is cool. And I don't know that's just inherent or kind of a learned response. Yeah. Other than that, they're pretty individualistic. I think they have their own fascinations. My son is an expert on whiskeys and scotches.
Oh yeah.
Which is fascinating. I hate to think if that got passed down from anybody.
Well, you're also, I mean, it's fair to say, I think you're a massive sports geek as well. I mean, you know an insane amount about FSU football specifically.
Isn't that funny? See, I wouldn't qualify myself as that, but I guess a different perspective, right? Like I see you talked about that imposter syndrome because I feel like I'd be called out on that. But yeah, well, we moved to Florida back in the late 70s, geez. And yeah, I mean, we had season tickets to Florida State and all three of us went there, right? So we kind of grew up in that and I just stayed with it. It's fascinating. And, you know, again, just kind of escapism, something you can watch. Like, I can't tell you the play, you know, in 1979, but I can tell you what our record was.
So we have these family Zoom calls and Mom and Laura start talking football and Eve and I just tune out and we start talking about our own thing on the side is what happens. So, Eve, what about you? Do you have any geeky passions, anything you feel like you're passionate about or secretly or out in the open?
So, do I have any obsession or any geeky traits still? You know, I do. I do. Again, going back to the obsession, I am literally sporadically obsessed with things. So I do follow still, again, the pandemic, Armageddon, really into that right now. Don't know why. I still am into sci-fi. I have to do it myself because my husband is more like Laura as far as with the sports interests. And there's a lot of sports that happen in our house, whether it's golf or soccer.
Hey, I was going to say football spelled with two O's, not a U.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess I should mention my husband's an English sports fan, golf. And so soccer is football, but I'll sneak off and maybe I'll watch something on my own. I'll watch maybe Continuum, Picard, Discovery. So I still do like those shows a lot. And I even read sci-fi sometimes. So yeah, I would say I do. And then, you know, you were talking about the kids, and we all have kids, and we've sort of watched them develop their separate interests. And while my son maybe followed his dad's track more with being a sport billy, he also had some, you know, surprising likes. He, I don't know if you guys remember the movie Avatar, one of his favorites.
Oh, okay.
You mentioned Deadpool, he likes a lot. And then the Harry Potter, even though that's more of a fantasy, it was a surprise move. I don't know, because my husband wasn't that into it to begin with. And our son kind of led the way. So I'd like to think it was sort of that sci-fi open-mindedness. And I think you guys introduced him to Back to the Future movies. So there was a lot of, I think, passing on of thinking outside the box, which I like.
Oh, I've done everything I can to influence both your children and Laura's children to make them geeky. So I've done everything I could growing up.
Thank you very much.
No problem. I love that you have to keep your geeky hobbies a secret still. Like, you have to go off to another television to watch and just keep a secret of your sci-fi love so your husband doesn't know.
Yeah. I guess I'm still not fitting in, right?
Have you seen Battlestar Galactica reboot?
I did start it based on your suggestion. So I think I'm in episode 2 right now.
Episode 2? I actually...
Teach yourself.
Right. My wife and I, we've actually been watching Stargate Universe. It only lasted 2 seasons. I love that series so much.
One of my favorites. You know, that's the only Stargate. You were a big Stargate fan, right? I mean, that's another one of the movies that Dad introduced us to. And I love the initial movie. I just didn't really follow it along. The series kind of lost me after a while. But SGU is just so awesome.
Actually, I think of the three of us, Eve, I think you're the biggest Stargate fan, actually. Like, I didn't watch much of the show, but I know you spent a lot of time watching it. Those secret moments hidden away from your husband watching Sam Carter dial the gate. So somehow I stumbled into Stargate Universe, which is in a lot of ways is like an amalgam of Stargate and Battlestar Galactica, really, in a lot of ways, and just absolutely love it. And I think I'm rewatching it for like the third time. Like, I don't do anything. I don't watch anything that many times except for Doctor Who. So I love it. I absolutely love it. So I, as far as myself, thanks for asking, I don't know that I have any secret geeky passions anymore. I'm pretty out there, you know, obviously with all my passions. I put it all on social media and all that and everything. So, but obviously I still, it's where my joy is found, is in all these geeky hobbies and stuff. And I've done everything I can to pass down to my kids. My stepson, he's 22 now. He's out living on his own, but and sort of like you mentioned, Laura, he found his own path. You know, he's all into anime, manga, you know, kind of stuff. He reads tons of manga. You know, that's not something I never got into, but I think me introducing him to comic books so early on influenced him down that path. You know, he's really into video games. He's really into role playing. He's got role playing groups they do. I know we probably got that from me, so I'm very proud to see some of the geeky traditions going on. My daughter, I mean, some of you guys who listen to the shows have heard her on a couple episodes talking about Black Widow or Buffy. I sat her down and we watched the whole Buffy series over a summer, and she loved it. She's really into Harry Potter. So she's got a lot of geeky habits or interest, I should say, in her as well. So I'm very happy to see that fostered and grown in my kids. And I hope, you know, it's one of the things my daughter told me at lunch yesterday. She said, "Dad, one of the things you've taught me is that it's okay to have interests that aren't sports." Because in school, it's reinforced over and over that sports are cool and sports are great and, you know, all these things. But having other hobbies is sometimes not as accepted. And this is what she was telling me. She said, "Now, I taught her that it's okay to like what you like and be passionate about it." And that made me feel really good. I felt like I had accomplished one good thing as a parent. So I was very happy about that.
You've accomplished a lot.
Aww. Yeah, I was going to say, that's modesty.
Checks in the mail. Checks in the mail.
So you said.
It better be. This is, my time's valuable, man. Well, you mentioned role-playing games. Mm-hmm. Is that like the thief that breaks in the housemaids there?
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, different kinds of role-playing games. These involve dice and superheroes and no costumes. No matter how many times, I swear, guys, I post about role-playing games, and every time my sister Eve goes, "So, do you guys wear costumes when you do this?" Every time. Every time. All right, folks. So that is, I think, going to do it for our discussion on growing up geeky in the 1970s and 80s. And I would really, really like to thank my very special guests, my brother Lore and my sister Eve. It has been an absolute blast to have you guys and get a chance to talk about this. So thank you very much to both of you for doing this.
Thank you. Thank you. And when is my solo show with you?
Starts as soon as you're ready. You will find out that producing a podcast is really damn hard.
Live long and prosper.
Yep.
All right, folks, we'll come back next time when I tackle a completely different topic with different guest hosts. We'll be kicking off a series of episodes taking a deep dive into the classic TV science fiction franchise, V. That's right, they're here to take the water. Thanks for listening, everybody. Until next time, I'm Shag.
I'm Eve.
I'm Lore.
And remember, folks, life is too short. Don't waste time being negative. Instead, celebrate the things that make you happy.
Find your joy.
Then you can lead into that. Like, then we'll move through the years because and I have a Star Trek Next Generation story to tell as well. Then you tell yours, and then we can talk about how we all went to see Into Darkness together and things like that.
Okay.
My name's Lore, for God's sake.
Sorry. All right. Go ahead, Lore.
Oh, wait. I didn't have to fake laugh at that one.
You didn't have to fake laugh. Nope.
Hey, wait. You've been fake laughing?
Oh, just for you. Shag's real.